On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask which Raider will make the biggest leap next season. Are we happy with the roster currently set? We look back at the backstory of the giant Davante Adams trade, and we completely shatter the team-friendly deal myth. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. I've been a little quiet on this here channel.
Off the grid.
A little off the grid. I was at a bachelor party for 6 days.
That's until awful. That sounds terrible.
It was.
That's a long time.
I never ever, Soto, thought I would say these words. Like, I don't know who I am right now. If I was looking into a mirror, it would shatter, but I'm all bachelor partied out for a long
time. Bro, it's just the perfect length is like 3 days, 3-4 days. Just like,
yeah, it was a lot of length and it was a lot of girth. So it was a lot to handle.
There was plenty of that.
But
big girls down there, I bet.
But it was fun. Congratulations, Blanco. Glad we could set you off. But it has been a rough travel schedule. Like, I went literally five weekends in a row. I went Vegas, London, Ohio, Mexico. Texas? Count this stretch.
Okay.
And then in 4 hours, I hop on a red eye to go to Jacksonville. So old RJ has been a little tuckered out, haven't been doing as much editing, haven't been sending out as many shorts, but after this weekend, things go back to normal, and we'll go back to cranking shit out because it's draft month. It was kind of the perfect time for me to kind of get busy with other stuff because there wasn't a whole lot going on, right? The whole, Chandler Jones, Davante Adams, like those big things hit, we hit it, and it kind of slowed down for a little bit, and then things just start picking up again here in a week or two. But we're here, ready to rock. All right. First one, question of the day. We will put this question pinned in the comment section. Let us know underneath. What say you? When the season rolls around, coming up late August, 17 games, followed by some other games in the playoffs. Which Raider that was a Raider last season will make the biggest leap this season? Question of the day. Which Raider will make the biggest leap this season? Because we've seen guys, and it can be someone who's already awesome and they get to like all pro level. Mm-hmm. It could be like a Clay Ferrell who's been trash for years. And maybe he realizes, hey, I got to step my game up, and he plays above average. Mm-hmm. It could be someone on the offense that just you think's just going to like absorb Josh McDaniel's system and just take off. It could be a defensive player who's like super young and then in his second or third year, he figures things out and takes off. It could be anything, right? We're not limiting this to a very, very strict, very, very strict parameters. Mm-hmm. Start with you, Soto. What say you?
Without looking at Graham's defense, because I know what he runs. I don't know how he's going to implement it given the pieces that he has here. That being said, knowing what I know of Josh McDaniels, I really think, and I talked about it on my show on Saturday, that it's going to be Kenyon Drake. I think the numbers are still up there. So the last three seasons that Josh McDaniel had a quarterback that he was comfortable with, uh-huh, the last three seasons with Brady, James White was the receiving back.
Okay.
56 receptions. It's 17, 18, and 19. 56, 429, and 3 touchdowns. 87, 751, and 7 touchdowns. 72, 645, and 5 touchdowns. He likes to use running backs. Now, Cam Newton in 2020 was the quarterback. Cam Newton does not check down. Yeah. If he's going to check down, he's going to run the ball. He's not going to check down. He's going to look down the field, or he's going to run it. And Mac Jones, he's not used to throwing the ball to running backs at Alabama. And he had two tight ends as his safety blankets. Mm-hmm. Even then, Brandon Bolden, James White played the beginning of the year, but then he got hurt, and the Patriots were looking for kind of like their receiving running back. Mm-hmm. And even after maybe the, a half a season until Brandon Bolden really stepped up as the receiving back, he still had 41 catches, 400 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So Josh McDaniel loves to throw the running backs. He loves to scheme to make space and get the running back the ball in space. And I see Kenyon Drake making a huge leap this year.
I wasn't even thinking Drake, but that's, I love that one because, right, for one, like, he's finally going to be on a awesome offense. Like, he hasn't, he's only played on crap offenses his entire career, right? And he would still semi-produce. Like, he was one of those guys on, like, the waiver wire you can pick up in fantasy football, and you're like, all right, I need, like,
cross your finger, be like, all right, go
around. I need, like, 7 or 8 points. Like, come on. And he could probably get that for you, right? Because he was kind of like the only guy in a lot of offenses. And then, like you said, McDaniels, he hasn't had a guy like this in a while, and Drake's that guy. I'm also curious what they do. Like, it also depends, like, reps is the only thing I think that might can hold him back, depending on what they think of Jacobs, right? Is he, are they going to try to make him basically a three down back like Gruden kind of groomed him to be? Are they going to rotate everybody like McDaniels normally does?
JMD does not believe in three down backs, man. He's never had a three down back. He's always had a receiving back. And he also uses a lot of two running back sets without a fullback. Mm-hmm. So he uses them as basically another receiver. So if I had to place my money right now, not knowing really how what defenders are going to play which position and how they look in the new scheme, I would go Kenyon Drake.
Drake was such a like it was kind of, we were kind of like semi-depressed you picked up Drake last season because of the price tag, but like the guy, you're like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, oh yeah, this guy can do some shit, but he just kind of never got rolling. Then of course he got hurt. So, I mean, the cheating answer would be like Darren Waller because he was injured for, you know, missed like 5-6 games last season and all this kind of stuff. Like, but I'm going to go a little off the beaten path and I'm cheating a little bit because I'm going to say Trevon Moehrig are going to be our second year safety because last season as a rookie, he was great, but he was one of those defensive players that are great because you never hear his name, right? He just kind of covered his guy. Didn't have any, I don't think he had any, one interception, maybe one turnover.
He dropped it.
Well, I know he definitely, you know, that's when we heard his name, when he was dropping picks, right?
Like, when he was tipping passes to the.
Yeah, when he was playing volleyball, 8 serving 3. But like you rarely ever heard his name because he was kind of just covering his guy, getting his tackle. Like they weren't like sending him on blitzes to get a sack. He wasn't getting a bunch of interceptions. He was just covering his guy, just doing his job. And that's what Gus Bradley wants of his safety, right? Just play center field, do your job, keep everything in front of you, make your tackles, don't be a hero. There you go. And so I think he'll be
that ain't Graham, dude.
That ain't Graham, right? So I think Morrig's gonna thrive in that system, and I think he'll be. I'm not saying he's gonna make a big leap as if he was bad last season. I think he's gonna turn heads a lot more this season. So
he'd
I think
be more of a stat filler, right?
Exactly. Like he'll get some highlights. He'll get people talk. You'll hear his name in a good way, as opposed to just he's just kind of covering his guy, and you don't have to worry about him, which is also good, right? So I'm gonna say, even though he's not gonna make a giant leap as far as he went from shitty to great, I think he's gonna go from just kind of just doing his job well to ooh, this is the guy I'm gonna follow. I'm gonna start buying his jersey. That guy made a highlight. I'm gonna hear his name. I think he's gonna turn into that kind of player under Graham. I think that's kind of what he wants to be. And he's now in a system with Graham that wants you to be that guy, right? Like if you whiff once or twice, that's okay. As long as the other times you're getting the pick, you're getting, you know, you're breaking up that pass, you're delivering the big hit, things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Graham. He asks a lot of his secondary and his safety specifically. He runs a lot of man, In that respect, I picking somebody from the secondary is not is a pretty safe bet on the defensive side because of how he schemes and what he asks his secondary to do, and he does put them in positions to make big plays if they disguise things correctly. If they kind of show their hand a little too quickly with their footwork or their placement or their pre-snap movements. You know, that it's not going to be as effective, but if they kind of get those little nuances down, yeah, I see the someone in the secondary, like a Hobbs or something like that, taking a huge leap because Hobbs was a stat filler. He was the blitzer, basically the blitzer from the secondary was going to be him
leaning on all athleticism. Like he wasn't even really like knowing his position that well or like timing things. He was just like,
oh, he timed snaps sometime. We're like, oof, he got in quick. tackles for loss. I mean, as a corner having tackles for loss, that's almost unheard of. And he had a more than a handful. So yeah, someone from the secondary, definitely on the defensive side. Well, who, if you had to look at someone offensively, who do you think?
Andre James. I think Andre James can do some big things. Because I'm a big momentum guy, right? Like, we had this conversation. Like, that's why I'm higher on Jonathan Abram than you are, because he's going like this. He started crappy and he still got holes, but he's going like this. And I look for momentum in people as opposed to just exactly who they are. And that's what James was doing last season, right? He ended the season as one of the better centers in the AFC.
Yeah, like the top three or four. Yeah.
Yeah.
The last month?
Exactly. Right. And so, obviously brand new, you know, complete coaching change, offensive coordinator, head coach, line coach. Hopefully, you know, he'll be all right for him. But it's a whole nother, like, as your first time being a 7-18 game starter, and then your second season, like, that's why he got so much better during that one season. It was 18 starts, right? That's so much experience. That's gonna help you improve. He's building on that, and we talked about it multiple times in the show. It looks like Nick Ziegler and company want continuity on their line. Like, they made almost no changes, right? So playing with all the same guys, even if Parker still sucks and who knows what they're going to do, is Simpson going to be the guy or whatever, working with all the same guys only makes you better, because you know their tendencies, you know what they do. As a unit, they should all kind of raise their games a little bit, even if the individual kind of like weak links in the chain don't drastically improve. As a unit, they should all get better. I think James is going to be the front runner of that.
Yeah, it's a good choice, man. He was ascending at the end of the year, and he's got some skills. He's athletic. He's got skills. We'll see how he does. He's still fairly young too. We'll talk about it later. But oh my god, I got some things to talk about, because I was looking at some mock drafts. Oof. If we go offensive line, and even like the fourth round, we're going to get a really, really, really good player. There are guys that are graded second round grades last year who are in, like, projected to be like late third, early fourth round picks.
Well, let's okay. So that's our question of the day. Which Raider will make the biggest leap? You heard ours. You heard our honorable mentions. What say you? Put it down in the comment section. Let us know. Let's go out of order, because I want to kind of go, like, lean on what you said. It kind of feels like the Raiders roster is set as far as the free agency period. Like, obviously we have a draft, but again, no first or second round pick. So you're probably not going to get a big splashy starter out of the gate. Maybe, probably not, but maybe. We've spent a ton of our cap until June 1st, and we still got Derek Carr to pay. So it doesn't feel, again, the cap, we're not capologists. There's a ton of movement, but to our best knowledge, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of money to pick up a giant, certainly not another Davante Adams or Chandler Jones or something like that.
Well, I mean, Carr's cap hit is only going to go down, because if they do an extension, it's going to rework so that there's more money available this year as opposed to less money available. So his cap hit's only going to go down.
Well, I'm wondering, because they backloaded Max's contract, they backloaded Chandler's contract. So maybe that was their plan, to semi-front load Derek to even... You may be right.
Right.
Or, that's big contracts are now.
Yeah, all I'm saying is I'm not saying that it will go down, but they're not going to eat up more of the cap than he's already taking right now. When they get him signed to an extension, either the cap hit's going to stay the same this year, a la like a Colton Miller when he signed his extension, or they're going to relieve some of the cap hit this year. And there's a couple guys out there that might look a little bit little good in silver and black.
Okay, it feels like the roster is more or less set. And this is kind of what it looks like, more or less. I'm just basically going off of ESPN's lineup, right? Just generally.
Zoom in on that.
What this looks like. So this is kind of what the offense looks like, right? Sounds about right, right? Yeah. Leatherwood, maybe, you know, who knows with that. That's basically it, right? I mean, those are our starting wide receivers. Running back, quarterback, tight end, fullback. Probably the line, right? Feels like that's the offense. Defense, they're doing the base 4-3. It's not going to be a 4-3, but just for the sake of discussion. Some new faces, right? Some differences here. I'm curious if Diablo is going to be our starter. What they're going to do with Crosby in like a 3-4. Is he going to be a down lineman? Is he going to be off, you know, hand out of the dirt? Talk about that. Trayvon Mullen's probably going to be the starter over Phillips, most likely. But that's essentially our roster, more or less. Draft is coming up, and unless, you know, there could be some big things in the draft. But is this a lineup that you're comfortable going into a draft where we don't have a first or second round pick in? Or are you saying there's a giant hole in that we have to address it in free agency?
There's two ways to answer that. Normally, going into any normal draft, I would not feel very comfortable, because normally you don't see the kind of depth that you're going to see in receiver, offensive line, and in the secondary. Those are very deep positions in this draft, and we can get very good players in the third and fourth round that any other year, average out the last few years, would be a second round grade. So I feel comfortable in our position right now that we're going to be able to add. We'll have at least two rookie starters. I'm calling them. We'll have at least two rookie starters.
Two rookie starters.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe both on the offensive line. Who knows? Because I'm looking at all this depth that's falling in. There's depth at other positions, but when let's say, for example, like interior defensive lineman, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of depth, but there's like an elite like five, and then there's like five or six more that are really good, and then there's a huge drop off. Mm-hmm. So those guys are going to get drafted, like maybe overly drafted, if that's what a need is on your team, because you know that if you don't get one of these top, like, you know, six, seven, eight guys, there's a huge drop off for the other guys, and you might as well just not even pick a guy, just, you know, sign a 1 year guy. So there's a couple of position groups like that, like even like edge rushers. There's a lot of edge rushers in this draft, but just not as many as, let's say, offensive line or secondary, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to get your edge rusher, you better get them early, because if, you know, you might be sitting there with, you know,
even if you need a guard,
yeah,
you know, you can get one later.
You don't get one later because you're dancing around with no seat, right? And there's no chair there. So that's why I think a lot of these offensive linemen are going to be pushed back. And there is quality offensive linemen that are going to be available later in the draft, in the mid rounds. And if it plans out the way it looks like in a lot of these mock drafts that I've been seeing, we can get some pretty good guys with our third round pick. Even if we trade back to get more picks in the third round, we can get a steal in the third round.
To answer my own question that I asked myself, am I happy with this roster going into a draft? The answer is a giant yes. And not that we can't improve, not that there aren't weak links, not that I wouldn't love to have Gilmore or Matthew or, you know, all these other guys that have been kind of rumored to come over. It's just that, one, I think the Raiders are done making giant splashes in free agency. They'll pick up randoms, but I think they're done making big splash. I don't think we're going to get a new starter, at least a week one starter out of the free agency crew right now. Which I love, because now we can do what every coach and GM says they do, but they never do. Just draft the best player available as opposed to need. Like, when we went to the draft last season, it was like, we desperately need a tackle. We desperately need a safety. We knew we were going 1-2 in those two positions.
Yeah.
Right? We knew we were going either safety first or tackle first, and the next one was safety or tackle. We knew that going in, desperate need. We're going to have two rookies starting for us. We ended up having more, right? But we knew going into the draft that was the case. Now it's like, I would be shocked if any rookies we picked up started. And that's awesome. That's great. Like, just be able to just be like, just draft the best guy available. We don't have gaping holes. Let's get depth or guys that we can develop, or guys, hopefully they challenge for starting positions. That'd be great. But there's no gaping hole that we have to like draft our way out of, which is an amazing feeling for me.
Yeah, we have we already have some depth. You saw the roster there, but yeah, double D's, baby. You know we like double D's. Depth and development out of the draft. That's three D's, triple D's. Woo! Quadruple D's. Draft day, depth and development. Ooh,
is that? Should we call that just an E? It's like an E bra. There's no quadruple D.
So listen, bro, I'm making it right now. Anyone has triple D's, come on over and I'll write another D on your shit.
Those are the type of developments that you have to have a strap. You know what I mean? You try to go strapless with triple D's. Yeah,
you can't do the spaghetti strap with that shit.
Impossible.
You gotta get that big mama strap. Walmart bra, fucking grandma.
With the cushion because they're so heavy that a thin strap would just like cut into your clavicle.
It's almost like a backpack looking thing, but for the front.
Yeah. Over the shoulder boulder holders.
Oh, that's Jesus. Required.
That's what we're looking for, right? That's what we're looking for. Draft development. Great.
Draft aid, depth and development.
And it's kind of nice that the positions that are some of the best for this draft are kind of the guys you want development for, right? Linemen. So we got young linemen, but so you think, okay, what do you think? Who do you think is going to be the five starting linemen? So obviously Colton Miller for sure, Andre James for sure. So you think Simpson, either Good or Leatherwood or Parker, whatever combination of those three, because Parker got paid like a starter. He got paid $3 million. So it kind of feels like there's only two positions that you could really fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think Simpson turned a corner at the end of the year last year. Mm-hmm. I think he was doing really well towards the end of the year. I would say if I had to pick right now, like gun to my head, it would be Miller, Simpson, James, Leatherwood Parker, like it was at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. I think Good, like you said before, Good is a better as a swing.
Love him as a swing, yeah.
And I honestly think that
he's the oldest one of the five. So if you want, if the plan is like I'm guessing, like I'm kind of, you know, I have any inside information, but my feel is McDaniels and Ziegler are like, let's just go young, have them develop together, and have them be a cohesive unit for seasons to come. Mm-hmm. Even if there's some guys that aren't great, I think the sum of the sum is more than the parts, whatever that saying is.
The sum is greater than the whole.
The total is greater than the sum of the parts. So
yeah, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah. So you can have Good be that great swing guy and just try to force Leatherwood into being something. Try to force Parker into being something. Try to make Simpson into something. Just kind of get him young and let them develop together.
Yeah. Josh McDaniels said it in the owners' meetings when there was the AFC day. Everyone gets a clean slate. Mm-hmm. He had an interview where he spoke about Cleveland Farrell specifically, but it sounded like that was to the entire roster. Now, a clean slate can be a good thing where, you know, maybe if you are not as productive as your draft position or as expectations might have set for you, it's a clean slate, gets you a chance to make a new impression. But a clean slate also means for, let's say, an Alex Leatherwood, who was a first-round pick, who was forced into the lineup because he was a high draft pick. This new crew did not draft you. They don't give a shit where you were drafted. If you can't play, you will not play regardless of your draft position. So it can be good and bad for depending on what your situation is.
Yeah, the idea of clean slate and the draft doesn't matter, I love. But it's also kind of like whatever you did last season should count too, right? It's like, wow, Brandon Parker's looked amazing in practice. He's our guy. It's like, well, you got to watch some film. Like that's got to – that kind of affects your decision a little bit, right? But
well, the thing is, it's like the draft. You can go and you watch these guys running around in shorts and tights and spandex all you want. That just confirms what you see in game film. Mm-hmm. Now, what you see in game film from Brandon Parker last year, okay, these are some deficiencies that we're looking at. Let's work on it in practice. Okay, how does he, you know, implement that coaching? And if he looks a lot better and he's working and he's fixing, correcting a lot of those mistakes that he was making on tape, then you could say, okay, we maybe have a guy that's turning the corner.
I like our roster. I really do.
I do.
So arguably the best guy on our roster, Davante Adams. Still, I'm still giddy about it. Still Took a little shimmy in my shoulders when I say Devontae Adams.
In your plums.
Deep down in my plums. It's a bluish hue. It's a silver and black hue. Down in my plums. And so The Athletic, the writer's Jeff Howe, did just some news and notes on multiple things. One of the things he talked about was kind of the details of what happened with Devontae Adams getting traded to the Raiders. So let's give you the quick Cliff Notes part of it. Adams, according to this report, had told the Packers that he wanted out. They franchise tagged him, and they thought, okay, he's just playing hardball. I want out. It's a negotiation play. Then Devontae Adams called Matt LaFleur, the GM, and other Packers decision out that Adams really had this hard on to be a Raider.
Okay.
And so he said, all right, so you got a trade. We'll talk about it. And as we know, it ended up being a first and a second for Devontae Adams. The negotiation with Adams took less than a day. And for to make him the highest paid player of that position at the moment to be done in a day, they either automatically agreed or super easy to deal with, whatever it was. That's not normally that common. The other sticking point, the other part that kind of got me is, and I'll put this up for you, the deal that nearly hit a snag when the Packers asked for a player in return. Initially, the Raiders offered their first-round pick and this 2023 second-rounder. And then shortly after, the Packers asked for the first-rounder and an undisclosed player. The Raiders weren't going to do it. And I guess it's kind of against league rules to do a trade with a player and another player who's on a franchise tag. I have no idea why that's a rule or the reasoning behind it, but you can't do a player-for-player trade if one's on a franchise tag. So it couldn't have happened anyway. But there was a player that the Packers wanted and the Raiders were unwilling to give up, even if it was Devontae Adams. So, first question, who do you think that player was? Who do you think the Packers thought that they asked for, that they feasibly thought they could get from the Raiders with a first rounder and Devontae Adams?
Well, the thing is your ask, if you're the Packers, doesn't have to be reasonable. You could ask for whoever you want. You could ask for Derek Carr back if you want.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking they probably asked for Waller.
That's pretty ballsy. Give me a first and Waller.
Why not?
Devontae Adams. It's ballsy. Especially with how good Waller's contract is. Like, that's asking.
Yeah.
It's a big ask.
Yeah. What do you think?
I'm thinking Renfro. I'm thinking Renfro. I think they think they could have got that. A Renfro deal. A good slot receiver.
For Rodgers. Good timing guy. Like I said, a similar skill set to Devontae Adams, maybe not as big and not as fast, but excellent getting open, can get open in short spaces, timing. He's where he's supposed to be. Very heady player. Yeah. Makes sense.
I'm just very curious of what the Packers think, because they have to assume they're in win now mode with Aaron Rodgers pushing 40. And so, like, a young developmental player, which is because Waller and Renfro are both, right? Like, they're Pro Bowlers right this second, but they're also
young guys.
They can be part of your franchise.
Hasn't reached their ceiling yet.
Yeah, not even close, right? So they're that. They could have also thought just straight up like a Colton Miller, a Denzel Perryman. Like, it could be like a win now, like expensive guy, right? I don't think Crosby, because the Raiders just paid him. That'd be weird.
And grip of money too.
Yeah, he's not cheap. I don't know.
Yeah, I think your line of thinking when I said Waller was right. Somebody who is an ascending player who's good now on a good contract. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Waller and Renfro are probably the only two guys that make sense in that respect.
I wonder if Waller would have demanded a new contract if he got traded, though. He'd been like, hey, all right, we're going, but
I don't doubt it. I would have too. I'm not playing if you don't fucking pay me. I know what the bullshit. Well, look what happened to Devontae Adams. Like, look at how they jerked him around. Like, I'm not sitting a foot on your practice field until I get a new fucking contract. So good luck with that.
The other part of this is
they would have had to give it to him too, because they just traded for him.
The other reason I brought this up, kind of the main reason I brought it up, it's fun to talk about who the disclosed player was, but this story just kind of solidifies what I've been saying for a while, that we've both been saying for a while, of, you know, every offseason, every fan base says, go get Tom Brady, go get Devontae Adams, go get this Pro Bowler, go get this three-time Super Bowl champ. Why can't we go get him? And it almost never happens. Now, this offseason is kind of the exception, right?
Like, yeah, it actually did it.
This is the rare exception.
A lot of movement. This
it's a lot, season, right? Yeah. It's like the NBA offseason, this NFL offseason. But again, all those things that happened are still rare because they still, it's not like the NFL went Yosemite Sam and just started shooting guns all over the place and just anarchy. It's more like the stars aligned and then realigned for every one of these individual spots. Like we talked about how Russell Wilson getting traded from Seattle to Denver, like everything had to go right for that to happen, right? This, he was unhappy there, the contract situation. He had a no trade clause and it was someone where somewhere he wanted to be. Like it was all these things that kind of lined up. Davante Adams trade, same exact thing. Like it had to be a guy that had the respect of the organization when he says, trade me or I'm not playing. Because a lot of players say that all the time. And teams often don't move on, right? With Devontae, they're like, you have our respect. Okay. There had to be a team that can afford him, both with draft picks and money, which the Raiders were. There had to be a place he wanted to go, which it just so happens his college teammate and one of his best friends had been talking about it forever. It just so happened the Raiders desperately needed a number one X receiver. It's just like, all right, everyone obviously wants a Davante Adams on their team. But to trade him and get him, it took all those things to happen, the timing to be exactly right for Davante Adams to wear this silver and black. So this is just, again, another example of, yeah, it happens, trading for the superstar player. But almost every single time a player's awesome, he doesn't leave that team. It rarely happens.
And that's why they're
called blockbuster trades, because they don't happen often. And if they do, it's because all the ducks were exactly in a row and the timing was perfect. And Davante Adams was no exception.
Yeah, it's true. It's everything just lined up perfectly. And that's why Davante Adams was rumored to the Raiders for so long. Mm-hmm. It's because it was a fit. It just, the timing had to be right. And everything just fell right into the right places. You have a new regime that's maybe a little bit more forward thinking in their philosophy.
I didn't even mention that part, right?
Like you mentioned, all the other things fell into place. It wouldn't be as unprecedented a move. We already saw, a lot of big players being traded. I mean, Mac got traded. Russell Wilson got traded. So a lot of big players were already moving. So it kind of gets the juices going a little bit. It's not like,
the offseason was already drunk.
Yeah, right. Like nobody trades their star player, and two teams just did it in the consecutive days, basically. So, a lot of stuff had to fall into place, and the pieces fit just perfect, and everything fell into place at the right time. Timing is the biggest thing, though.
Huge. Davante Adams' deal when he got signed was the biggest guaranteed money in wide receiver history. Massive deal. Guaranteed $65.6 million.
Damn.
It's technically a five-year deal, but it's essentially a $65.5 million deal for 3 years, basically. Mm-hmm. And the more we hear about this contract, so again, the only naysayers about this Davante Adams trade, not the player, the draft picks were fine. It was like, man, making him the highest paid wide receiver. He's in his 30s. Was that wise? Was that wise to make that move? And I said, absolutely. We both said, absolutely. One, we're going to find out this contract, like every contract, isn't as big as...
What are the real numbers?
Yeah. Exactly, right? There's the first number that comes out that the agent wants out there, that the agent tells all these, reporters, hey, that's the number, to make him look good, right? Make the deal look massive. And then we find out later what the real number is, right? So we knew that was going to happen. And then we knew what we've been saying for... There's a lot of I told you so's on the show. Then what happened is what we've been saying for forever. With the salary cap going like this, and basically every position other than like running back, salaries are going like this.
Yep.
So the longer you wait and the shorter your contract, the more you're going to have to pay eventually. So Davante Adams was the highest paid wide receiver in football for like a week. And then we saw the Tyreek Hill deal when he got traded to the Dolphins, $72 million guaranteed. And just this week, Stephon Diggs. How about that steal, right? Fifth rounder now becoming that, like, what a grab, man. What a crazy steal. Stephon Diggs just got $70 million. Stick around for the Buffalo Bills. literally 2.5 weeks ago, people are saying, "Oh, you can't pay Devontae Adams. He can't be the most expensive paid player in wide receiver in football. He can't do it. It's not worth it.
He's not anymore.
He's not. This time next year, watch. He won't be top five. Watch. This time next year, he won't be top five. Dude,
there's DK Metcalf is coming up. AJ Brown's coming up. Like there's like, some
and
guys.
Then the next season, there's you got like Jamar Chase coming up. Like there's some monsters needing contracts.
Well, here's the big thing too, is those are two guys who may not be on their same team next year.
Yep.
In 2023. So after they play 2022 season, they can sign with another team and get that blockbuster deal.
And get even more.
Yeah.
Now you're open market guy more or less, right?
Yeah, those are going to be the two big prizes following this season in wide receivers. So I can see those guys jumping up here, no problem.
So DeAndre Hopkins completely reset the wide receiver market. Was it 2 seasons ago? Seasons ago. You're like, wow. He was like, and that was more than just making him the highest paid. Like that was making him the highest paid with a
by a lot.
Like that was making him. Everyone's like, whoa. Like that's resetting everything. 2 seasons later, 4 guys ahead of him.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you, if it's guys you need, you can make the contracts work. And this, again, I'm not trying to start another Derek Carr fight. But this is also why I'm saying I think more years is better because you're going to have to pay him so much more for only doing a 2 or 3 year deal as opposed to a 4 or 5. Comes with its risks for sure. But
well, again, it's what's the real money that he's getting? What's the real years that he's getting? If you say a 4 year extension, it's probably going to be a 3 year extension or a 2 year extension with the 2 years on the end.
Well, maybe. I mean, because his last one was a true 5,
yeah,
more or less, right? Like this 5th year, it's
that was also his first big contract, and he was coming off of a damn near MVP 12 win season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different, and it's also a regime that just I don't think really gave a shit about fucking about the future. It's a little different now. There's a cap. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Ziegler said it himself. There's a number that we have to hit, and you don't go up and up and up because then you make mistakes. We have to negotiate for like a sweet spot, and we have a number that we want. He has a number that he wants, and I don't think it's going to get really crazy, honestly. Yeah.
So you sent me this tweet earlier, and
interesting, wasn't it?
Interesting, because you don't think of teams in these terms. Or you think of teams like this, but you don't think of these teams being where they are on this list. This is the list of the most arrests per team in football since 2000. So this is a wide berth. This is 22 years. So this isn't a because obviously the Raiders looked terrible this last season with the arrests, right? Like this is a wide berth, over two decades worth.
Yeah, but that was 2 arrests.
Yeah.
That was it.
Well, Jacobs.
No, it was 2.
Well, Jacobs wasn't
No, it was the year before.
It was the year before. Okay. It was just, and Hobbs wasn't arrested the second time, right?
No.
So here are the teams with the most arrests since 2000. The lowest teams, number 32, Texans with only 16, Rams next, 18, Lions 19, Eagles 21, Falcons 22. That's the best teams, the lowest number of arrests. The highest ones, start with number 5, Browns. Number 4, kind of saw coming, Chiefs.
Queefs.
Number 3, Bengals. Number 2, number 2, Broncos.
Oof.
And number 1, the Minnesota Vikings.
Yo, it was all that fucking that crazy fucking porno yacht of theirs. That 17 right there.
The Vikings like to buy in bulk.
That was 17 arrests in one shot. That was 17 players.
And then number 22, way low on the list, beneath all the other AFC West teams, right? Yep. Broncos, 2nd most arrests. Chiefs, 4th most arrests. Chargers, 20th most arrests. Raiders, 22 with 25 arrests. We're the Saints of the AFC West.
Yeah, tie with the JETSS Jets.
Yeah. Look at us.
Talk shit, but you know what? Our guys walked straight and narrow. We're, 25 arrests in 22 years?
We're the Angels. That's barely one a season.
Don't ever say we're the Angels.
We're
the Angels.
We're the Las Vegas Angels.
I'll say that.
We got halos on our heads, not helmets.
No, we don't like the Angels around here.
I wonder if that kind of hurts our brand.
I know, right? Be like, oh man, I won't wear this bullshit.
Yeah, look at us. Look at us Boy Scouts. We're supposed to be the ones fucking shit up.
NWA and the freaking Pistons would be like, man, get the shit off me, man. Wearing this shit.
You ready to do some what up winbacks?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Iguala. E, capital E, capital Iguala. G-Guala. This is talking about Derek Carr. Hopefully he goes for what he deserves. The owner isn't taking a team-friendly salary to help the team out, so Carr doesn't need to either. I do love the, in all forms of discussion, boss versus employee, president versus bureaucrat, you know, that power dynamic, right? If you're demanding something of your subordinate for something you're not willing to do yourself. Mm-hmm. The best bosses I've ever had were the ones that worked just as hard as we did or more. Those were the best. When I was at Tap Out Magazine, Bob Pittman Sr. was the first guy in that office and the last one to leave every day. He was the boss. He was the millionaire. He was there more than anybody. When there was a shipment coming in and we needed just bodies to move stuff, took off his Versace suit, took off his $1,000 cufflinks, rolled up his sleeves, moved boxes with the rest of us cattle. Best bosses in the world are guys that are like that, right? So I love this kind of like dynamic of like, oh, if you want Carr to take, hey, Mark Davis, you want Carr to take less money. How about you take less money, right? Blah, blah, blah. Love that thought process. It's just not real life because owner's salary isn't tied to a salary cap.
There's no risk. There's no risk on Carr's end here. It's like, you know, the owner's taking all the risk here.
Exactly. So again, I love the thought process. And if it was a, if it was like baseball and there was no cap, right? And the owner's making $100 million. You'd be like, all right, well, if you care so much, take five of that, give it to me. With the cap, it just doesn't really work. And I think it's also just another, like, people are keep trying to throw reasons at me why Carr specifically and quarterbacks in general, you should take less money to help your team. It never, ever, ever, ever happens. It doesn't happen. You get what your leverage says you get.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Not out of the kindness of my heart, we'll give you more or we'll give you less. It's what is your leverage? That's what you get.
Yeah. And then there's a little bit of wiggle room in between there, but not a ton, not as much as you might think. Mm-hmm. Because if Derek Carr's like, no, well, I want X amount of money, and you say, okay, well, then you're going to have to potentially go to this area, play for this team who is in this position. Is that what you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the gap of money.
Yep.
Where it's worth it. And then if the gap is not as big, maybe it's not as worth it.
And again, that's not like doing the team a solid.
No, that's where you leverage. Can negotiate.
That's exactly leverage. And that's the difference. Cause that's true. Like as normal people, right? Whether we're quarterbacks or carpenters or truck drivers or lawyers, when we choose our job and we're picking where we're trying to go, and hopefully if we're lucky, we got multiple people that want our services. Money is clearly a giant part of what we think and what we want, but it's rarely 100%. It's rarely the entire thing. Like, all right, I can make $10,000 more a year, but it's a 1-hour commute instead of working from home.
Exactly.
All right, I'll take less money and work from home. Or I got to move out of state to a place I don't want to be. Is it worth it? I don't know. Those are, and again, that's not taking a team-friendly deal. That's just part of the negotiation, part of the leverage. All right, Carr, you want more money? We can't afford you. You're going to fucking the Browns or someplace you don't want to be, maybe, right?
I was working for a company, and they went through a merger, I think the second month I was there. And then they went through another merger and like maybe 3 years later, and then another merger like a couple years after that. And every time there was a merger, more of the upper end jobs were leaving California and going to other states, Atlanta, Texas, and places like that. So I had a conversation with one of my one of the, you know, VPs, and they told me, you know what, I asked them, what can I do to kind of move up in the company? Mm-hmm. And they said, move to Georgia or move to Texas. And I said, well, I ain't gonna do that.
Yeah.
So I stayed in California and took a little less money. I just said, you know what? You don't have to pay me more. Just give me a better title. And I used that title to move to a different company a couple of years after that and get paid a lot more money because of the title that I had.
You went from janitor to master of the custodial arts.
So yes, it was exactly. cum rag boy to mopper.
Cum rag man.
Come rag man. I am no longer a cabin boy. I'm a cabin man. Yeah. It's so like, I mean, yeah. it's all about the leverage and like I said, like even now I work in a place that, you know what, I'm overqualified to work there. My education and my experience would say that I should probably do something else, but it's super close to my house. It's fun. I like the people I work with. I still make a good amount of money, and I can still work at the gym at night. And it mm-hmm. gives me opportunity to like take off what I need to if I need to travel for tournaments and stuff like that and fights. So it works for me. It works yeah. for me. So I mean, that's what Carr has to do now, is he needs to find out, like you know, McDaniel said, the sweet spot. We need to find out what works, and we'll see what's most important. Is it what he's built and what he wants to build and what he wants to see followed through with the Raiders, or is it going to be just a cash grab? It all depends. Those are the two ends of the pendulum swing, and let's see where they stop in the middle.
It's like in MMA, where in the UFC, the players, the fighters make a little, like roughly less than 20% of the total income. Whereas in the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, hockey, it's all basically 50-50. More, it's pretty close to 50%, right? And so many people are like, oh, the UFC is so greedy. Dana White is so greedy. How is he shafting these fighters? How does he sleep at night? And the response is, because he can. Do you think like Roger Goodell would give his left nut for him and the owners to keep 80% of the NFL revenue and not give half of it to the players? Yeah. Why do they do it? Not because they're more generous. Not because Roger Goodell and the owners are nicer or they care about their players more. Because the players unionized, negotiated, and demanded it.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's a one big word.
They leverage their position, and so they go to the negotiation table with a double-barreled shotgun instead of a slingshot. Well, as the UFC fighters, they don't have any of that, so they don't have the negotiation power to get what they want. Therefore, they're not getting as much. So it's not like, the UFC fighters are taking a team-friendly deal. No, they just don't. It all comes down to leverage. Every single person in business does what they do because of their leverage, and they get what they get because of their leverage. Nothing more, nothing less.
And it's not like those UFC fighters don't have anywhere to go. They can go to Bellator and make more money, but just never be heard from again. Mm-hmm. Or they can go to ONE and they can make a lot more money and just be famous in Asia.
Yeah.
Ask Dimitri Johnson if he's happy.
Mm-hmm.
He's fucking happy.
The rare MMA trade. Then asking Dude, for Demetrius Johnson.
That man is making hand over fist money because he has a lot of sponsors now that he can tap into that he wasn't able to tap into with the UFC.
Yeah. John Brubaker. This is to you, Soto. I didn't have a chance. This is the one one-on-one that I missed. So I'm very, that's why I put it in there, because I want to know what happened. John Brubaker, your Raider commentary, as usual, superb. Your social commentary, this is actually kind of, could have been harsher. Not what I tune in for. What's he talking about?
I believe that was the post slap heard around the world episode.
Okay.
The Will Smith episode. And I went in on that. Mm-hmm. And how Will Smith is a piece of shit for smacking around a freaking 5'9", 130-pound Chris
51-year-old.
Rock. Yeah, it's like, dude, he's like, Will Smith is like 6'4", freaking 220. He's a big dude. He's not that gangly fucking kid from Fresh Prince anymore. Like, he's a big guy. Mm-hmm. And he's smacking around freaking little-ass Chris Rock. So that's what I said it for. And to double down and to show John Brubaker that I do what I want and I talk about what I want because I have the mic and I have the show and I have the platform. I immediately followed up his comment with talking about Colin Kaepernick being able to throw at the Michigan halftime of Michigan's spring game. So take that, John Brubaker. Glad you're a listener.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Go Raiders.
Love it.
There's one thing I've learned from being like a broadcaster for over a decade. I always kind of feel like, look, I don't look at myself as superior or I know more or I'm smarter than my audience. It's I just devoted more time to this. And so I have stuff that I think you'd want to hear. Right? Like I get to cover sports full time for my job and God, I'm blessed. Right. I know most people can't, right? Sports is their hobby. Maybe they don't want to think about sports that long. Right. It's what I just watch football on Sunday and I listen to the autumn windbags to kind of get me excited. Let me know what's happening. Right? I don't want to devote all this. I burn so many calories just consuming sports, trying to be as best as I can at my job. Right. I'll be able to want to do that. And so I can understand why people are, because a lot of broadcasters, Soto, they have a microphone and they're like, all right, I know everything.
Yeah.
Like everyone who's everything I think people want to know now. Mm-hmm. And some audiences like to hear other stuff, right? You tune into a UFC radio show and I'll talk about strip clubs for 20 minutes. And some people love it, right? Some people don't. What I've learned is I feel like when people tune into shows for something, if they hear something they like, that's not about the normal content, right? If it's a Raiders show and you're talking about strip clubs, if they like what you're saying, they don't complain. But if you're saying something that they disagree with that isn't about the Raiders, then they say, I don't want you to say other stuff. I just want you to stick to the Raiders.
You're just talking about Raiders, yeah.
Just talking about Raiders stuff. Now, if you said something they agreed with that was off topic, they're probably going to be quiet. That's at least been my experience. I don't know if that's how you are, John Brubaker, but that's how I know a lot of people have been.
Yeah, and honestly, guys, I welcome your opinions. Mm. You know, I have data and facts and stuff that we talk about, but that's not really what I'm here for. That's what RJ is here for. Like, he's more the stat guy, the numbers guy, like that guy. I'm here to give my opinion on things.
I'm here for sophisticated dick and fart jokes.
That's exactly. I'm here to give my unique perspective. I do have knowledge of the game. I do have knowledge of what's going on right now in the world, in the NFL. And you know, I just want here to give my unique perspective. If your perspective differs from mine, let's hear your perspective, back it up, and let's go back and forth. Not one time have I ever told anyone who's telling me that I'm shitty, that I'm an asshole, that I'm this and that on the comments, have I ever told them, stop talking to me, stop commenting, ever. Let's hear the situation. Let me hear your point of view, and then I'll give you mine, and we can go back and forth. If we disagree, that's fine.
You'll mail anthrax to their house, but you won't tell them to stop talking. That's a line you just won't cross.
I put it in their salt shaker, bro. Come on.
Last one. James Hannigan. The problem with this draft is there are a lot of first-round players that have a second-round grade. However, after that, there are a number of guys in the fourth and fifth round that have a higher grade. It's actually a good draft for teams that are first or second-round picks.
Exactly what I've been saying. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of depth, especially as deep as wide receiver is, there is more depth in the secondary and on the offensive line in this draft. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you guys, we're going to be able to, if we get the right guy, there's going to be guys out there on the offensive line, especially, and in the secondary, we can get 3, 4, 5, maybe, you know, we have 2/5, 3, 4, 5, we can get, you know, a lot of good players. If we end up getting 4 quality players from this draft out of 5 draft picks, 7th rounders are crapshoots. Like, that's the basement bin, like, you know, you see what's there. We could literally, like, with no joke and no homer attitude or anything like that, we can legitimately get quality players that don't need a ton of development, maybe a little bit, not a ton, in the 5th round. Those are like 4th round, 3rd round players in any other draft that are like, okay, they're good, they can start, but they need to work on a couple of things. Think of like a Malcolm Kuntz. Right.
Yeah.
He turned out to be, with a little development, he looks like he's going to be a little bit of a stud. Like, he looks, you know, given his numbers and his limited playing time. This guy's flashed some real ability. You're looking at getting that kind of quality player, but in the 5th round this year, in specific, you know, areas.
And like we said earlier, this is a great draft if you don't have giant gaping holes, right? If you're like, all right, we need desperate like last season.
That is like the sixth time you've said giant gaping hole. I have not said anything.
I was going to keep saying giant gaping holes until you snickered and said a dirty joke.
I want you to acknowledge the fact
I was fishing
that I'm growing up and I'm not acknowledging your giant gaping hole.
I've been throwing a giant gaping hole in your face until you'll take a bite out of it.
Yeah, you've been in Mexico for a week. You got a runny giant gaping hole.
It's not gaping because everything's just kind of flushing out fluidly. Nothing clean. But again, just keep compounding. Like, you know, totally agree with you, James. It's a team that we're just kind of looking for depth, which is great. And two, I think another thing that a lot of people are talking about, first round, regardless of whether you deserve to be a fifth overall pick or a 20th overall pick, your pay is the same. So even if you're like, let's say you're in a draft, you know, the top 12 guys are complete studs and then 15 down to 25 are kind of blah. You still have to pay number 20, whether you're a blah backup or you're Joe Burrow. The pay's still the same.
Trade out of that motherfucker.
So if there really truly aren't first and second round talents in the first and second round, you're better off doing a third and below and paying them third and below money. Like we were talking about it off air. Normally, most teams, when the draft comes up, they have to keep several million, $5-7 million to pay their rookies. The Raiders have to pay less, like a million
two,
and a half.
Like two will do plenty.
Like less than two in your gravy. All plus your signing bonuses and everything. Like you're good.
If you keep the five picks that you have where you have them, meaning you don't, you know, let's say you know, trade a couple of the third and one of the fifths to move up into the second or something like that. If you keep your three, four, two fives and a seven, $2 million and you pay for all of them.
Yeah. And this isn't one of those like
all five of those players are less than like one first rounder.
And this isn't one of those things where it's like, okay, we don't have a first or second round pick. Let's make up reasons why it's good. Like this is genuinely the case. Like if there were, like, obviously there's some first round talents I'd love to have on the roster, but in our situation, our cap situation, our depth, our roster, this specific draft, where we would draft, it might work out better. We're definitely going to save some money. Might work out better, right?
I could definitely see us getting a couple of steals in with our third or fourth pick. Even if we go two offensive linemen back-to-back, there is so much depth. It's ridiculous how much depth there is in offensive line.
And let's put it this way, right? We're not going to end up with like a Cleveland Farrell type salary to have to pay down the line.
No. And right? This guy will probably play, not like Cleveland Farrell, where he doesn't really play. Yeah. Up till now, we'll see what he does this next year.
All right, that's it for us. I am just 3 hours away from jumping on a plane, heading to Florida. Be back working UFC over the weekend. Life gets back to normal for me, so we'll get back to making sure we get videos out every day. We'll get shorts coming. We'll get posts on our YouTube. I didn't even know this till we started this channel. You can just do actual posts on YouTube. So we'll make sure we keep doing that as well. All the good stuff you know and love. More things coming down the pipe. I know we keep teasing it, but we've got a really good graphic designer. We've got our logo already set. There's some other things coming down that I think it'll make you feel more and more like you're part of the Autumn Windbags, which is kind of the goal. You all are either way, but there's other ways that you can show it that we're going to start coming up with. And again, all the sophisticated dick and fart jokes that we've been talking
about. All you can handle. And, you know, I think we might be considering a name change too. We might consider the name change to change the name of the show to RJ and the Beluga Whale.
It's an option.
Considering the logo.
Yeah.
I got Beluga Whale a lot. I got Juan Belushi a lot, quite a bit.
It should be Sean McVay and the Beluga Whale.
Yeah, McVay and Beluga Whale. Or McVay and Belushi.
Be like the Nick Ziegler, the
McLushi.
McLushi.
That's it. McLushi it is.
We're turning that into a t-shirt.
Done.
All right. Until next time. Knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you check us out on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. And of course, follow us on YouTube as well. Bonus content on YouTube you can't get anywhere else. Until next time, later.